David, I think that's a very good point because few experts have made it quite clear that it's the soil fertility is a breakdown of these bedrock materials. So when we, as you say, there's 7 kilometres or so of bedrock material there, it's almost like an inexhaustible supply of nutrients. And I think that's something, if that is true, which I believe it is true, that is something for farmers to tune into, that there is some huge bank of fertiliser there to be used for, well, the 7 kilometres is there.
I guess the other thing...
Can I just
add to that, that we need to bear in mind that 95% of the nutrients that the plants require come out of the air or water. So we're really only talking about 5% that they need to get from within the soil. So when you look at it from that perspective, where the Mother Nature has provided with all we'll ever need, providing we use the right technology. Over.
And I think that is quite clear that that's where soils, Dr. Elaine Ingham's coming from, the Soil Food Web International is coming from. And Gerhard, would you like to make a comment in that area of the role of microbiology on existing materials in the soil?
Yeah, before I do, what's actually quite interesting is that historically we've only ever measured available nutrients, and for anyone who's able to take up on this discussion that we're having, I'd put the question to them if they are actually soil testing, do they in fact test for only available nutrients, which is what the standard procedure is, or do they now also test for totals, which they would have to ask the lab to analyse? And I guess the other thing is that talking about a great depth of minerals in soil that we can pick up on, but interestingly enough, the standard in Australia is that we're only taking a sample down to 10 centimetres, which really, if our plant roots only went down that far, then we'd be finding it very difficult to maintain any form of crop given the variability that we've got in our weather across the country. But in relation to the question about having the microbes doing a lot of the jobs, and I didn't answer your previous question that well, Hugo, but that which David sort of encapsulated, and I agree with everything that he said there, that the biology has the ability not only to extract minerals out of there, but out of the soil, but it can create its own structure. It needs to have a habitat that it can live in. It doesn't just mysteriously appear and disappear. It actually forms a aggregate in the soil, and depending on the size of the biology, like the bacteria, anything from about half a micron up to a couple of micron in diameter and size, it needs to live somewhere. It needs to take up space, and it needs air and water. It needs food as well, and it's just as needing of those life-giving millions is what we are. So if ever we're looking at a soil, we need to understand that there's the different levels of life forms there that are trying to eke a living out of the soil and contribute to that soil's fertility and viability. So we've had instances where we've had high quality compost teas applied and the soil structure has changed enormously over only a 6 month period. A penetrometer is used and couldn't be engaged any further than about 10 centimetres before it reached the 300 psi, which seemed to be the critical level. And then 6 months later, you use a penetrometer and it's gone right down to the base, which is 80 centimetres deep. So the power of the microbiology is enormous if it's got the ability to work in the right conditions and you've got the diversity of microorganisms there as well. So not only can the nutrients be extracted, but then the structure of the soil can be changed without the need to run mechanical implements across it to try and mechanically open it up.
Yeah. So, Gerhard, can you just briefly explain the difference between available nutrients in a common soil test and that of total nutrients? Many farmers don't know the difference between the two, and so you might like to explain that.
Well, there are different tests that are provided by different labs. So certainly one that's very popular in Victoria and southern Australia is if we measure phosphorus, is an Olsen P level. A lot of people will have heard of Olsen P. And all it is an available phosphorus that's using an extraction method that has been devised by a gentleman by the name of Mr. Olsen. And that's just a standard extraction method used in the laboratory. If you go to northern New South Wales, the standard up there is a coal P. And that will measure available phosphorus using a slightly different extraction method. Suffice to say, both of those will come up with figures which are different for their particular type of extraction, but at the end of the day, they will tell you whether you're within a parameter or a range of desired levels that will then give you enough phosphorus that is available to the plant at the time that the sample was taken. That's fairly important that we recognise that at the time the sample was taken, that those nutrients were available. As soon as you get any weather change or temperature change in the soil, above the soil, the mechanism by which the plants take up that nutrient changes, the biology will change, and you'll find that available phosphorus can change quite significantly, even over a short space of time. Now, with a total extraction, what the lab does is use a very harsh acid, and it'll extract the total amount of phosphorus out of the soil. That includes the available phosphorus as well, and it'll give you a measure then of what is totally available. So as David said before, you get certain microbiology that has the ability to extract that phosphorus out of that soil and make it available to the plant. Does that answer the question, Peter?